Our next presenter is Ms. Lydia Ogden. She's on loan to Emory University from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. She is a PhD candidate in a multidisciplinary program in health policy, health services research, and political science. She's a 20-year CDC employee and worked in environmental health and domestic and international HIV.
Thanks, everybody, for being here. Anybody from Wyoming? We've covered other states. Shoot, I was really hoping there would be somebody from Wyoming here because I want to talk about your state. Well, it's so small. There's not many Wyomingans, or however you say that. I want to start with some acknowledgments, particularly my colleague who's here, Dr. Patrick Burnett, and my colleague who isn't, Dr. Jim Bueller, and our research assistant par excellence, Cara Sammartino, who's here as well. And especially acknowledge our funder, who is also here, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Healthcare Financing and Organization Program there. And I'll have another acknowledgement shortly, which I'll tell you about. So I want to tell you what our project was. We got funding from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation to look specifically at the issue of funding formulas in public health. We know a lot about funding formulas from the feds to the states in other contexts, but very little, frankly, was known about public health, and that was a gap that our project sought to address. So it's a two-phase project, and in the first phase, we looked at various metrics to compare program allocations. We described how those metrics affected allocations and whether they were consistent with program goals. So essentially, if you're a visual person, we looked vertically at allocations and how they might change. And then as we looked at different adjusters, we looked at how adjustments worked across states, so we looked horizontally. And phase two of the project is actually the part that I'm leading, and that looks at political and policy implications of funding formulas in public health. So as I said, we know a fair amount about funding formulas in other contexts, and our government, a federal government, uses funding formulas to allocate a fairly significant amount of money on a yearly basis, about $400 billion plus. That's not counting the recent ERA funds. And what you may not know is that the Department of Health and Human Services allocates more funds by formula than all other federal agencies combined. They account for about 60% of the federal government's formula allocated grants. And in fiscal year 2008, that was about $265 billion. Now, most of that was for Medicaid and CHIP and other what I would call either health insurance or healthcare provision programs, not so much in the CDC realm, in the sort of traditional public health realm. And the other important thing to know is that HHS generally does their allocations in two ways, their grants in two ways, formula allocations or discretionary allocations. And both of these are statutorily driven. Formula allocations stipulate exactly what by statute what's required to be awarded to a recipient if a state, for example, submits an adequate plan and if they're in compliance with the statutory and regulatory provisions of the program. The discretionary grants, which is more typical of the CDC public health arena, permit the government to use discretion, and it's typically a competitive grant process. These also may be formula driven, so it's a little bit of a misnomer, but I just wanted to make sure you had that background before I went forward. So, previous analyses. There is an incredibly vast amount of writing on federalism in this country. We are consumed with it. And basically, federalism is how the feds and the states and the local governments interact and push each other's buttons and get money to the lower levels from the federal level and that sort of thing. But most of that, what I would call more academic, it's very little practice writing, is not focused on public health. And there have been, there's been a fair amount of research done on Medicaid and CHIP and on Ryan White. But again, not so much in the public health arena. There have been two IOM workshops that looked specifically at funding formula allocations. One delved specifically into the statistical issues. It's a fascinating read, but very dense for those of you who are interested in the statistical issues associated with formulas. And the second was more generally on funding formula design. So we felt that it was reasonable to assume that public health programs and policy are different enough from health insurance programs and healthcare delivery programs that public health really deserved its own rubric for funding formula development and design and implementation and evaluation. And so that's the gap that our project wanted to address. And I realized that I skipped my other, can I go back? Yes. Today, as a matter of fact, we launched a survey with ASTO, our other collaborator that I wanted to acknowledge. I went to ASTO a few months ago and said, what do you guys know about how states are using funding formulas? And they said, well, we don't really, and we really would like to know, so let's work together on a survey. And so the survey went out today. I'm pleased to say we are surveying all the chief financial officers at the states, and we're asking them to tell us about their experience in using funding formulas in their states in a variety of public health programs, everything from immunization to maternal child health to environmental health, et cetera. And so we're really excited about that and are hopeful that it will really add to both the practice literature and, you know, some best practices as well as the academic literature, which is something that us folk in universities always have to be concerned about. So, okay, so our analysis. We looked at four existing Health and Human Services programs, three at CDC and one at HRSA, and we created four hypothetical programs. And then what we did was we assessed allocations in those programs using a variety of indicators for funding need. For example, a straight per capita allocation or people living in poverty and so on. And then we used a variety of adjusters to look at things like the cost of delivering services that, for example, labor costs or geographic area. And we looked at the ability of the jurisdiction to fund services on its own absent federal funding, so sort of a fiscal capacity measure. And then we assessed how these alternative allocation models and adjusters affected the original levels. What happened to the money when we pushed the button and all these changes happened? So I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about that. These are the four programs. The CDC Public Health Emergency Preparedness Program is a base plus program. Like the hypothetical program that allocates 20% of the base, the CDC program allocates actually 26% of its funding as a minimum base across every state, and then the rest of the money is allocated, bless you, on a population basis. So then we subjected these eight programs to an examination based on need for service. So we looked at measures of need, including persons at risk for or with a disease or condition of concern, like the smokers. And the thing to know about this, and I know you all know this, is that these kinds of measures are imperfect. We can never be sure that we have captured everyone. And so, for example, poverty as a measure of need, it's certainly associated with occurrence and poor outcome for many diseases and conditions, but it can't be asserted to be a per se cause. And similarly, income inequality is associated, but you can't say it's the etiologic agent. So that's a bias right there. Anytime you use those kinds of measures in a formula, you have to know that they're attenuated measures from what you're really trying to get to. The really important thing to note is that we were not trying to find the right measure, because the right measure, whatever that is really dependent on your jurisdiction and your situation and how in flux things are, you know, or how stable things are, that kind of thing. So our adjusters based on need were things like, as I mentioned before, the cost of delivering services, the state's fiscal capacity, and income inequality. And a lot of these got thrown out. Patrick wanted me to say that. A lot of these got thrown out because we found them to not be very helpful in terms of really getting at what an allocation does. And the thing that I wanted to say about the adjusters based on need is that they, like the other, the allocation measures, are imperfect, and that they may indeed not mesh very well with your program objectives. For example, if you've got a program targeting people living in poverty that's financed with a regressive tax, your program may be working at cross purposes. And so it's just important to bear those things in mind as you're developing a formula. So here are the comparison metrics we use to look at all the different allocations based on these adjustments. And I want to spend a little bit of time on the proportionality of allocation, because that's really our gee whiz new novel contribution. And basically, what that is a Gini index-like or a Lorenz curve-like measure of funding across states. It measures the equality of funding across states for a given allocation. And that is important if you think that one of the reasons for intergovernmental transfers is to promote equity or equivalency. So that's our big gotcha. So the other thing I wanted to note is that in the range of change, and you'll see this, I'm going to show you an example in a minute, the number of states with a great shift up or down, a 20% or more shift up or down, could be seen as the Senate index of happiness or displeasure with a given allocation. And the percent of U.S. population in states that had a similar up or down could be viewed as the House index. And while we might all kind of roll our eyes at that and say, oh, it's just politics, public health is politics. So that's important, and I'm going to show you that in the next slide. So this looks at the CDC's emergency preparedness funding, which, as just as a reminder, has a base plus. And if you take away that base and allocate strictly per capita, a straight per capita allocation, what happens is that the larger states gain and the smaller states lose, of course. But we've made four senators happy, and we've made 22 unhappy. And as you can see, the maximum percentage decrease was 77% in that column. And that was one unlucky state with very few people that lost more than three quarters of its funding, and that happened to be Wyoming. So, does anybody know who the senior senator from Wyoming is? Oh, come on. Okay, it's Mike Enzi. Mike Enzi is the ranking minority member on the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is CDC's authorizing committee. And he is also a member of the Senate Finance Committee, which appropriates CDC's budget. So, this index would not make him very happy. And likewise, if we do a per person living in poverty, it's even worse. We've made even more senators unhappy. We've made 25 of them unhappy with a per person in poverty allocation. And Wyoming lost even more in that allocation because they have so few people living in poverty compared to other states. So adjusters matter, and they matter a lot. And that's our principal finding. Phase one of the project stops at this point, and as I said, what we found is that your measures matter, and that you can push allocations, you can bow that curve one way or another depending on the adjusters that you use, and that these adjustments will have policy and program and political consequences, and that's where phase two of the project takes over, and that's where we are right now, and that's the part that I'm the lead for. So what are the policy implications of these various metrics? Any policy developer has to ask what biases are built into a given formula, and some of these are fairly opaque. For example, different surveys of income, poverty, and health insurance yield wildly different estimates across those surveys. And in fact, the range was so great that the Department of Health and Human Services commissioned some external researchers last year to take a look at these and find out how these things traveled together or didn't, and what the disparities were. And they presented that research at this year's Academy Health meeting in Chicago over the summer. Anybody go to that? Yeah, I know you did. Anyway, I found myself sitting in a heavily statistical section and marveling at the fact that the survey data that many of us had taken for granted in public health were really in some ways very flawed. And for example, what they found is that rounding of reported income varies very greatly, so that that affects eligibility and classification by poverty status. Specific to the area that I'm working in now, in health reform and health services research, they found that estimates of health insurance are wildly variable. The estimate for people under the age 65 who were without insurance all year long varied from 17.2% in the current population survey to just 8.1% in the survey of income and program participation. Thank you. So, you know, that's half. And that's really concerning, because the CPS is sort of the standard measure. It's widely cited, it's widely used, and what these researchers said is, it's an okay point in time measure, but it's a really not, and even some caveats around that, but it's really not a great measure for all year round insurance. So, you know, any of our funding formulas, and I'd say our collectively, that use the CPS health insurance stat as a part of the formula or a measure of need or an adjuster, you know, now need to, I think, be taken into consideration. So we're also going to be looking at the political implications of various metrics. You know, there's a kind of a standard operating assumption that money begets money, and that states who have more money get more money, and that if you've been funded for a long time, you get more money. But there's also a little less understanding of, at least from an operational effect basis, what the flypaper effect might be. That is, how federal money may displace state money and what that implications are for funding formulas in that instance. So in my political analysis, what beyond the Senate and House indices, you know, who's happy and who's not, we'll be looking at this issue of federalism and how it affects policy and program, because everything from the targets, the population targets, to the formula inputs, to evaluation schemes are, you know, affected by federalism. So we'll be looking at that. And we'll look at how allocations affect and are affected by the political landscape, specifically how stakeholders and funders may view and value a program based on the models that the formulas are operationalized with. So, in summary, formulas are thought to be transparent and fair because they're quantitative, and I think we have an assumption that numbers don't lie, or at least they're more objective than just saying, well, I think state X should get Y and state Y should get X. But every formula has these inherent biases and limitations, and I think as public health planners, we simply need to be aware of that. We may choose to change some of our adjusters, or we may not be able to because they're statutorily defined for us, but we sure better know what the effects of them are in terms of how we evaluate a program and what the expectations of that program are, particularly in an environment where outcomes matter a lot and pay for performance is being talked about increasingly in public health. So stay tuned for part two, maybe next year, and I'm happy to take your questions.